Blog Talk Radio.
First, I must confess that over the past few years, I have been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in his stride toward freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klaner, but the white moderate who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who constantly says, I agree with you and the goal you seek, but I cannot agree with your methods of direct action, who paternalistically believes he can set the timetable for another man's freedom, who lives by a mythical concept of time, and who constantly advises the Negro to wait for a more convenient season. Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection. I had hoped that the white moderate would understand that law and order exist for the purpose of establishing justice, and that when they fail in this purpose, they become the dangerously structured dams that block the flow to social progress. I had hoped that white moderates would understand that the present tension in the South is a necessary phase of the transition from an obnoxious negative peace in which the Negro passively accepted his unjust plight to a substantive and positive peace in which all men will respect the dignity and worth of human personality. Actually, we who engage in nonviolent direct action are not the creators of tension. We merely bring to the surface the hidden tension that is already alive. We bring it out in the open where it can be seen and dealt with. Like a boil that can never be cured so long as it is covered up, but must be open with all its ugliness to the natural medicines of air and light, injustice must be exposed with all the tension its exposure creates to the light of human conscience and the air of national opinion before it can be cured. To the message.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. Once again, y'all in the right place. I want to say, first off, good morning, Facebook Live people popping in, chiming in. You guys are part of the show, so don't feel like y'all over there. You know, you're in here. I'm reading your comments. If anybody wants to call in, 646-716-4621. Press 1 when you can hear the show. We'll bring you straight on. And you know, today we're doing a weekend review because this has been, Lord knows, it's been a woo-saw week. And so we're just opening it up. Everything is out there, and you don't. It's not important that you agree with me, any of the co-hosts. You know, you get to say how you feel, and maybe we learn something from how you feel, and that's the way that we do this show. So with that, we're gonna jump straight into this week, and I'm gonna say, first off, I gotta say good morning to the co-hosts that are here, and a couple others will be dropping in here soon. What's up, Big John?
Yeah, good morning, Stan. I also wanted to say to the viewers that even among the hosts, we don't always agree.
That's right.
You know, so we invite anybody to call in with opposing views, or actually, if you want to confirm something or add on to something that Joe may have said, or Stan or myself or any of the co-hosts, we welcome you all, and look forward to you calling. Before we get into the show, I just want to make one quick announcement, Stan.
Yeah.
And this is, this upcoming week is a blessed week for me because Black Friday is the release of and launch of my crypto coin called MD2, which is connected and backed by my company, MD2, my drop demo. So I'm exceedingly excited because I worked quietly, diligently on this project, and now I'm making the announcement. And you're going to be able to find information on it on behind the blue curtain, different, and I lost my thing.
Say it again. Other platforms?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Joe. Always got my back, so that's why I love you, brother.
But, John, you know what, though, bro? If you would, real quick, because you're such a key part of this show. And, you know, where can people follow you so that they can connect with you, not the show? Because, like I said, this is our show. Where can they follow John and find out where John came from and what John is doing? Because it's easy for someone to say, I've got an app and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. But what makes you monumental is you represent this philosophy that we talk about from the bottom to the top, rebuilding, changing your life. Dude, you're the definition of that. And a lot of followers love you to death, brother. Spend a second. Where can they find you? Whether if it's just Facebook or whatever, let them know.
Yeah, I'm not very good with any of the things, but I'm on Instagram, John Ruffin. John Ruffin on Facebook. You can find me on MikeDrop.com. And basically, it's not my life is not much different from what I do here. Some people like to wear two masks. You know, you see them on behind the blue curtain, and you're like, wow, man, that dude's a serious brother, that brother. But Stan always talks about having skin in the game. So when his cameras are off, the show's not on, who are you? And
yep.
I try to be consistent in everything that I say and do. So if you was to come on my page, you will find nothing but positive messages. I try to uplift the community. I try to be an example for those who have been through any type of struggle. Because just because you get knocked down, you're not knocked out. You only knocked out if you fail to get up before the count. And I just want to encourage others, man, look. If you're in them streets, bro, take those skills, and it's called transferable skills, and you put it into a legitimate business, and you know, that life is not a long-lasting life. And I got to take a moment to stand. A friend of mine who was falsely incarcerated received 4.2 mil, and he came home. He started his own business, moved down south, but he didn't change his lifestyle, and he just got killed this week. He had a huge club in North Carolina, a restaurant, but he wanted to continue to sleep with other men and women. He actually shot someone while he was down there. So having millions of dollars don't change who you are. You have to change who you are. And I'm not speaking bad on my friend, but I'm just saying that if you're not careful, changing locations, having money, if you don't change within your heart and what's in your mind, you'll still end up in the same places. So on that note, I'm done.
Appreciate you, brother. Izzy, good morning, brother. You get the coffee first of all, because we know how Izzy get it. You don't get that. Oh, yeah. That's a cappuccino cup there, bro.
Espresso, man.
Okay, you good? Are you all right?
I'm good. Ready to go. Ready to talk. World's terrible. Country sucks. Let's go.
There you go.
Hey, that's a little bougie cup you got there.
It is. It is a bougie cup, but, you know, what are you going to do? I need my little little stars of bouginess to, you know, balance out my poor ass lifestyle.
I got you, bro.
I got the fancy cup. When I sip it, I can pretend.
Oh, man. Big Joe, good morning, brother. What's up?
After that, I don't know what to say. Let's roll, man. Let's roll.
All right. Okay. Woo. Let's, and when I say, you know, the weekend review, this, all of us have a different opinion of what was important to us or significant to us through the week. So I didn't, we didn't sit in our meetings and draw out, well, Stan thinks this, so this is what we're going to do. No, I mean, we all have different things. For me, and we're going to go around the horn, if you guys want to bring something up on the Facebook Live, I see you all there. Mar, I see you there. G, Big Mike, good morning. If y'all want to bring some up, but you know what's really great? If you call in 646-716-4621 and say why you think something is important in the weekend review or add in your opinion. We're not going to ask you where you're from. We're not going to ask you who you are. If we know who you are because of the number, I'm not going to say who you are. That's up to you. Because I think
the CFA. Come on, man.
You know? All right, Joe, let's start with your week. You go first.
Well, look, you know where I'm going.
Come
I'm
on.
Going to Kenosha. Let's go to Kenosha real quick.
Kenosha.
Come on out there. Let's just kick this can over. That was some bullshit. Jesus. I for the life of me, I'm just flabbergasted. I've never seen a case where the victims were called anything but victims. I've never seen a murder trial where you could give jury instruction before they're supposed to get instructed. How do you, you know, we talk about victimization. How do you criminalize a victim who, as I would think, was presumed innocent before they get proven guilty? Now, listen to what I just said. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. Am I wrong, Liz?
No.
I didn't get it. I mean, the judge starts off by saying you can't call them victims. You got to call them rioters or looters. And as we were talking about earlier, wouldn't the word be alleged? But you can call this guy innocent? I mean, there's so many holes, but I will tell you this. I don't think the feds are done with them. That's my opinion. But I also think that they get this guy on the civil side also. As someone said earlier, he doesn't have anything. Well, I'm going to make sure I take his drinks. You killed two people. You shot three, killed two, and yet you walk away unscathed. Now, what does that say to the rest of America? What does it say, particularly, we can talk about race relations all we want, but what does that say to the real law-abiding citizens? I mean, there's so many things that were just wrong with this thing. I was knocked out. When the jury came back and they didn't say, again, not even manslaughter. They didn't even convict him of manslaughter. The guy, let's just take it apart like I saw it. We have a 17-year-old kid that went someplace, crossed state lines, bought a gun illegally, which should have been a straw purchase violation, if anybody understands that. Should have been a straw purchase violation. He shoots three people, kills two. But guess what? He's defending himself. You should have been in the first fucking place. That's my
right. Joe, let me ask this, because in right along with what you said, okay, because you opened up something, and I want to go in where I have my problems with some of this. And Judge Schroeder is just straight out of I'll leave it alone, because he's way out of history, out of a bad part of history, in my opinion. But when we talk about it, you broke it down. Okay, let's talk about the first element there. The police were there in force, were they not?
Yes.
Okay. Why were they there? Because the mayor had put what in place? A curfew. Not a curfew for protesters and a curfew for pro-police people, but a curfew for every citizen. There is video where the Rittenhouse supporters received water, met with at their, whether it was their stage staging point or the police staging point. And if it was their staging point, I find it amazing that the police were at their staging point, which tells me there was communication that went back and forth before any of this kicked off. Now, one of the officers has even heard clearly on the video saying, "We're glad you guys are here." Who is we? Who is we? Now, at some point, did these people feel deputized? Here comes that word that never came out in this trial. Did they feel deputized and empowered? And I was on Judge Joe's show yesterday, and I said on there, and I said, you know, and this is not against the pro-Second Amendment people. I have no problem with the Second Amendment. This is where my problem comes in, is that people don't seem to understand. And that's why I played the clip to open up, that opened up this show, where Dr. King, the same Dr. King everybody wants to tell us February, the I Have a Dream speech that most of us learned in fourth grade. The white moderate part, that part toward the end of his career, nobody wants to go there, where there is that indifference. Had Stan or Joe or John or Izzy shot two people, shot a third one, there is no way in the world, and nobody's going to call this show and be able to tell me that Stan would have been allowed to walk up the street past all the tanks and tear gas and merely wave his hand and give a signal and go home. That's bullshit. And I didn't give the caveat, but y'all will hear some hard words on this show. This not Sunday morning. This Saturday morning. We can deal with that tomorrow. But that's part of what's in there. So when the judge threw out, when he threw out the curfew violation. Well, then, Judge, if they're throwing the curfew violation out for Kyle Rittenhouse, therefore, it should have been thrown out for everybody who was there, including the protesters. So then if we're going to throw it out for them, then why are the police even there to begin with?
Well, how about the thing, the other issue I had was, he talked about barrel length. But he overstepped, or at least he didn't look at the fact that this guy did a straw purchase. It's in the record. The guy says, "I bought the gun for him," knowing he's a juvenile. Wait a minute. That was a straw purchase last time I heard. Well, also, this fact that he shot three, killed two, and this thing called felony murder rule applied.
But, Joe, let's insert this.
Or am I going the wrong place?
Oh, no. You know what? You're on point, and I know as he's talking, I got to say this. Let's throw, America lives on so many cowboy cliches. And let's throw in this cliche. A good guy with a gun stops a what? Bad guy with a gun. At the point Kyle Rittenhouse is shooting people, to the vast majority of the people there, he was a what? To the police who did absolutely nothing during the shooting, nothing, zero, nada. And they have escaped from this relatively unscathed. Nobody called them out. You know, at what point, and that's my danger, when I hear these NRA philosophies, and that's where it came from, a good guy with a bad gun stops a bad guy, that's up to the interpretation of the person with the gun who is good or bad. And when you have this stigma of what a bad guy looks like, which we've seen in America, it's not in the best interest of a lot of people of color, whether they're black, Hispanic, Native American. It's not in our best interest to just simply say, well, the Second Amendment is great for everybody. It's signed in the Constitution, so let's roll with it.
I'm glad you brought that up. Let's talk about that Second Amendment. I've heard some people say, my God-given right. God didn't give you that fucking right. It was in the Articles of Confederation, which at the time, just so you know, you were in slavery. Just
it didn't apply to you.
There's that. But again, you know, it's interesting because, again, when we look at this as in a totality of circumstances, where is the justice? Where's the justice for any of those people that were vilified by the judge? But here's the other thing, just so you know. This judge has run unopposed.
Thank you.
People will hear this. He has run unopposed. So when you complain about what came in, blame yourself because you're not a registered voter. You didn't take the fucking time to vote.
Voting doesn't help if there's no one else to vote for.
Well, okay. Well, I won't argue that. I can't argue that.
Come on, Kenosha. You don't have one other person that can get this guy out of office? Come on.
And And let's add this into it, too. I'm glad you brought the voting part in, Joe, because I want to say this, and I want to make this part clear, because America has this dysfunctional concept of truth. You know what? I don't – these jurors, I'm not going to villainize them. I'm not going to call them white supremacists. I don't know them. None of us do. But I can tell you what they were. They were voters because their ass was on the jury. I don't care who they voted for. They showed up on game day. So, I you know, at that point, I got to give them that. Now.
You're a lot nicer than I am.
No, but I got to say, where were all the people?
Giving them shit.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I got to say, they showed up. And they got selected.
They only showed up because they were specifically selected. They got rid of all. They left
right.
One black guy on the jury.
Okay, and I agree with that, Izzy, but I got to say, in that initial jury pool of we don't know how many people, it could have been 1,500, it could have been 2,000. How many people, black and white and Hispanic, fought tooth and nail to get off of jury duty? They may not have known, I'm quite sure, and I don't know this to be true. I know from my experience in jury duty, you go into a central pool. All the courts having cases during that time draw from that jury pool. Those that are accepted, you get divided up and you get sent. That's where voir dire is done. So I don't know if this was just for the Rittenhouse trial or for several other minor trials that we, of course, didn't make the news. But I have seen one thing in my experience in jury duty, that line that lines up in front of the judge when he says, give me a reason you can't be here, that's a long-ass line, a LAL, and it's full of
this. How about this one, Sam? How about the fact that the judge let Rittenhouse pick from a box who he wanted to remove? I've never, ever, ever seen that in any courtroom.
And this guy's been doing that for like 10, 15 years. He's like, oh, yeah, I do it all the time.
But so we have to go back. So let's in attacking the problem, let's go down to the source of it. We can easily say, well, you know, this guy is running unopposed. Then I have to say to the minority community there who may disagree with this decision, who have you brought to the plate? See, if you don't, you got to bring ass to get ass. That's the truth. You know, and so I'm not going to absolve. The system is what it is. It's functioning how it's supposed to be. It needs to be changed, but we can't. We have to stop voicing reaction to what is and start putting in place things that change that system. I'm not saying it's perfect. I didn't agree with the Rittenhouse decision, but how did that judge get there? Jurors, no matter what they believe or no matter who they may or may not be as people, I have to go back and say, for a lot of the people I see voicing their opinions, some of them who I know personally, these people are voters, you're not. Unless it's a federal judge, that judge is elected. That district attorney is elected. Your mayor is elected. Who selects your city manager if you have one, and subsequently your police chief? So, I mean, elections are a very important part of this, and people can have all kind of weird philosophies of why they don't vote, and that's their opinion. But voting becomes important, and that is what is killing us in seeking police reform. We don't have the George Floyd Injustice and Policing Act passed on a federal level. There are states who have enacted parts of it. Why? Because there's pressure within those states from voters, black, white, or whatever, who believe in it, who have pushed it. But federally, it slid under everything.
Hey, Spen.
Come on, John.
I just want to say, unfortunately, a lot of the public do not realize that judges are given, like, a certain leeway. And unless you've really been in a courtroom and experienced it, like, for me, like, I requested that even when the judge charged the jury, that he follow the language that's already written in the books. Well, the judge actually rejected it, and he's given leeway where he can put it in his own language. And this is like the danger, because a judge could be a law a certain way, and just a word or two, a jury off. So they don't read directly from the book. They come from the, from their heads with what they memorized over the years from doing trials, and this is one of the dangers with a trial. And a lot of the public do not realize this.
Well, it, what you're talking about is how their philosophies are based. You got constitutionalists, you got federalists. You have all kind of different philosophies. However, those who run along the lines of constitutionalists allegedly adhere as close to the Constitution as they can. As the Supreme Court judges, the one that just married the lady that just got put in, she's a strict constitutionalist. So her interpretation of the law is along those lines. But again, when we look at when these articles were written, that's what they believe. That's what they write their opinions on, based on their interpretation of what the Constitution said, or they believe to say. Am I right or wrong?
The thing about the hardcore constitutionalists is that it implies that the founding fathers themselves didn't advocate. It's like, you were supposed to keep writing. Like, you weren't supposed to stop. Like, if they came forward now, they'd be like, you didn't write anything else. You just went with this. Like, that's nothing. Also, I misspoke earlier. I got my nonsense confused. The all-white jury is for Ahmaud Arbery. I apologize about that confusion. Can't keep track of all of my injustices anymore. The one thing I'll say to the voting thing, and I always say this, is like, is I don't know if the whole participating in the system to fix the system that is acknowledged to be corrupt and not functioning or functioning the way it's supposed to do is going to work to a certain degree. Like in Kenosha, it's all get out and vote. Well, what does it matter if you vote if the guy's running on a post? And then it's like, okay, find somebody to run against them. Okay, what's the good of running against them if you're running in a county or a state where this guy's run a post for, you know, over a decade or more and has control of, has more money, has more ad space, has more lobbyists, has more connections, has more clout? Like, how do you compete against something that's so established like that, especially when you account for the fact of, you know, lack of education in certain areas, lack of resources in certain areas? Like, it starts becoming this mantra for me that it doesn't exactly acknowledge the extent of the problem. Like, just to imply that we're going to vote our way out of this implies that we can still make the system work the way it's supposed to, even though we're acknowledging that the system is working the way it's supposed to right now with everything that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way it's supposed to be working. This is the way the people in charge designed it to be working. Like, we have to start thinking of different methods of changing the system other than just continually participating in it and hoping that we're going to vote our way out and having this, like, oh, eventually it's going to work out mentality, because that mentality is really still only benefiting one group of people. That whole, like, we'll get there eventually thing is really accommodating a lot of the people that are already there and are in control of the rat race.
You know, I agree with you, but I
agree with the voting.
Right.
Thing. I'm not saying
I'll say this, though. You know, I don't think Stan, as 59 years old, Black in America, I've seen this justice system. I worked in it for it. Right, and at some point, yeah, I've been subjected to it. But, you know, the reality is, I think that we, before we can vote our way out of it, we've got to vote our way into it. See, that's where we fell off. In the 80s and 90s, everybody's running around. People stopped voting. And we got a guy sitting here right now who was one of his biggest claims to fame was being able to vote. And the fact of the matter is we have these regimes that are in place, and they are in place consistently because those who we would call the opposition or Americans who think different, whatever spin people want to put on it, these people vote. They vote. And we are not, we, and I mean Americans, period, you know, those who disagree with the system that's in place, I don't think we're doing our best to vote because we've taken voter rights and registering to vote and made it a black issue when in many places it's an American issue. I mean, I did a show earlier this week talking about Appalachia and their opioid problem down there. And that's probably high 90s white. How many of those white folks don't vote? Whether they don't have time, don't think it's important, whatever the case may be, but they're going same old, same old. And the problem is with it, we can say, well, I don't care about the administrative things of the government, but it transfers down into things like the Rittenhouse trial, the Ahmaud Arbery trial, Tamir Rice, Arthur Stoddard, Philando Castile, because not only are you talking about juries, it ain't just about juries. It's about these judges who sat on a bench, they're 70 years old, they're wearing Depends, they can barely stay awake, and they got your life in their hands. John, you went through the system with some of these same judges. What's your opinion?
Oh, definitely, man. I mean, during evidentiary hearings, like, I witnessed the judge fall asleep, jurors fall asleep, and the judge not say, oh, let's take a break and make sure they got water and stuff like that, because he was sleeping. Well, I want to say something to what Izzy said. Izzy said that, and I agree with you, Izzy. I don't know if voting is going to be the answer, but I know that not voting has not been the answer. So our not participating in the process has been to our detriment.
I'm not saying that.
No, I understand where you're coming from, Izzy. I'm just saying that we have to partake into, yeah, I got dogs over here going crazy. I'm sorry. What I'm saying is that we have to get involved in the process and not just be reactive, but proactive. The problem that we have, we wait until it's election time and then try to lift the spirits of the people. Yo, you got to get out there and vote. You got to get out there and vote. We're not out there trying to teach the people how to vote, how to be part of the system. A lot of the problem is a lot of our people are lazy. I call it what it is. A lot of people don't want to go stand in line.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say, I got something to do today, man. What's more important than you putting this dude in office? What you got? Because this dude can really affect what you got going on today.
Mm-hmm.
So what's so important that you got going on today that you can't take the time out? You may be sitting in office for 4 years or whatever the case may be. So I think in order to beat someone, and I've just seen it happen in where I was born at. If you, Stan, you're probably familiar with Bobby Valentine.
Yeah.
Former baseball player, famous, former baseball major league coach. He grew up in my town. He just lost the mayor vote to some woman. So, and it was a narrow win, but she won. Because, and you know, and Bobby was trying to work the hood. He was trying to work the hood, but it didn't work out for him. With all his money, all his businesses in Stanford and places, it didn't work out for him. So, money, yes, but I look at Linda McMahon, billionaire. All her attempts at trying to win office didn't work out for her. So if you get out there and motivate people, and let's not wait until it's time to vote, but get out there and start teaching our people about the importance of voting. Because that's the problem. A lot of people don't understand why it's important to vote. They don't understand that this judge is there because you didn't participate, or this politician is there because you didn't participate. And that's the only thing I'm saying. Not voting has not worked for us. So why not try
voting? You know, Joe, let me ask you to do this. You and I talked earlier. And to John's point and to Izzy's point, exactly to Izzy's point, and he made a strong point that it's very important it doesn't get overlooked. Who do you vote for when nobody else runs? That's a damn good point. You know, but Joe, let's talk about Judge Schroeder for a minute.
Schroeder.
Yeah, Schroeder. I tell you what he was. he was Kyle Rittenhouse's best attorney he had in the courtroom. But go ahead, Jeff.
Again, as we found out, he's run on the polls. His edicts are something I've never seen. Beginning with not being able to call the victims of the crime victims, but calling them rioters and looters.
Again, it establishes bias, like right off the break.
Exactly.
Well, that's one of many.
Yeah.
You know, then what I also thought was interesting was when he wouldn't let the jurors see the drone footage, but then he stopped some other stuff from being seen. I think he made, but again, all of us know he cannot be retried for murder. It's double jeopardy. It can't be retried.
Yeah, but Joe, you know, Judge Schrader has been in court since Christ was a corporal. Yeah, he's been there a while. But you know what? I'm not going to put everything on Judge Schrader. I'm not going to throw it all on him or the jurors. That prosecution was weak. It was weak. To me, they didn't do their homework on everything as well as they should have, considering the fact you have a budget by taxpayers. There's a lot of things that could have been done. But the one of the things that they did is they gave the defense, Kyle Rittenhouse's team, they gave them, somebody's calling me on Facebook Messenger. Don't call me on Facebook Messenger during the show because I'm not going to answer it. 646-716-4621. Press 1. And I'll put you on, but I'm not going to do Facebook messages during the show. But they gave Kyle Rittenhouse's attorneys the rough drone footage. But then in trial, they wanted to introduce the enhanced drone footage. And, you know, that got thrown out, and it should have been, because you should have provided the defense with the enhanced drone footage also before you tried to introduce it. And those are little things. I don't know if they were mistakes. Maybe they were honest. But this is what really bothers me with these trials. I mean, these attorneys make a lot of money. These assistant DAs are not broke people that aren't getting a lot of money. These people are making money, and they're representing the citizens. And mistakes like that shouldn't be made at that level. But let me go real quick to a caller. Just calling in from the 404 area code. Good morning, brother. How you doing?
Morning, Stan. Morning, fellas. People on the hey, how y'all doing today?
Good, you
made a reference, Stan. You made a reference, and it makes a lot of sense. And I'm gonna go ahead and elaborate on that. You talked about money. See, when you're dealing with a situation like a murder trial, I think it all depends on how much you can pay an attorney to get you off. And what happened was Kyle Rittenhouse had donations all over the country. People were donating money. His mother even got on TV and asked for some money to help with the legal fees. And people are sending money. And people are his defense team was the best money could buy. Now, when you're dealing with somebody in the hood, per se, that's on a murder charge, 9 times out of 10, he's got a public defender. That's what he has. When he has a public defender, 9 times out of 10, you roll the dice and you get what you get. If you can get a public defender to get you off, God bless him. But this whole situation was all about how much money could be made off of doing what they do. This attorney paid him to be good. If you didn't give him any money, he wasn't going to put forth the effort. Now, the DA, yes, weak. DA was weak. Them guys couldn't do anything. They did everything wrong, and I feel like they did it to sabotage that whole trial. I feel like that's my opinion. But I told everybody on my show, I said, he's not going to get charged with nothing. He's going to walk. I told everybody that. Because the problem with it is we interject feelings more than we interject the facts. These laws have been on books for years. I mean, the length of the barrel? Come on, man. I didn't know the length made any difference. I think if I point a gun at you and shoot you and kill you, I didn't know the length of the barrel was a factor. I thought the fact that the bullet came out and pierced you and did it, I thought that was it. I didn't know barrels were taken into consideration. They took curfew off. This judge basically did everything and nobody opposed it. Nobody charged it. And the fact that he does run unopposed is another problem. We are not woke. You can't get mad if you don't know the law. I told everybody that. He's going to get off according to the law, the laws that have been put in place for years, the laws that have just been there. We haven't – nobody's changed anything. We got black congressmen. We got Latino congressmen. We got black senators, Latino senators, and nobody has attacked these what do you call it, Gregorian laws, Draconian laws. We have put these laws in place, and it's actually designed to take people like us, like look at my skin color. I'm sorry, I got to say it, my skin color, and it's going to design us to fail every time we try to make a move towards some system, some kind of system of justice. It's not going to go because they're going to look at those books. And they're going to see everything that's written down, and they're going to say, okay, we're going to prosecute him according to the books. And unfortunately, Kyle Rittenhouse didn't fall into any of that because of the color of his skin. You can say it was a law, but we all know that it's skin color. Let's just call it what it is and stop dancing around the issue. He got off because he was white. He didn't get off because he was in the right. He didn't get off because he was the victim or they were not the victims. He got off because of his skin color. And if that upsets a bunch of people, then so be it. Every time we see this, I mean, I've seen people go to prison for possessing a gun, and they've gone for 20 years just for possessing one. They didn't shoot anybody. This dude had a gun, shot three people. He did everything that was literally supposed to put him in prison for the rest of his sorry life, but he didn't get any of it. And we can't get mad because we're not woke. We're not understanding the law. So when y'all put the law out and tell it, now everybody understands. But I'm sorry, Stan. Your show is a day late and a dollar short. We should have knew this years ago. Everybody should have knew this years ago. They should have knew it, and they don't. And that's all I got to say on that. I'll mute and then listen some more.
All right, brother. Appreciate you. I see everybody got their thinking caps on this one. Because he come in and drop bombs. I mean, let's talk about the – you know, it's how much your rates go in. I did three shows over the last week on Kyle Rittenhouse. And one of the things I said on those shows, that it's not just Kyle Rittenhouse or the McMichaels and the Aubrey killing that are on trial. America is on trial. And we're seeing the behavior of people America has empowered. Hello, Karen, and hello, Kent. People who feel they can grab their gun and protest because you're marching in front of their house and they don't like it. People who can come out and challenge a UPS driver in uniform because he's black in their neighborhood. People who can stop you where you pay rent because they don't think you belong in their neighborhood. And yes, they've lost their jobs. Boo-hoo. But you know what? The vast majority have never been prosecuted, even though they called the police what we all know is a false report. So these people have been empowered over the last 3.5 years. 3.5. So now they feel that we can just take it a step further. And to me, the Rittenhouse decision now gave them another arrow to put in their quiver. And not only now can I go to these events, hello, January 6th, because let's not forget, these were the same people, the same mentality that was at Kenosha.
You mean the Patriots?
Oh, yeah. Patriots. Yeah, same people. Now, what have we done now? Even with the January 6th fiasco and the slap on the hand that these people are getting, we're condoning, we're massaging. Oh, I got to say this, but I get you. It's okay. And at some point, you know, and I said this to Travis earlier, we were on a call, and I said, you know, what gets me is everybody's afraid to touch the Second Amendment. Now, First Amendment, you cannot go on an airplane and yell hijack. You cannot go into a crowded movie theater and yell fire. But yeah, we don't want to touch the Second Amendment. And I asked him, I said, I'm just thinking solution-wise. How about if you've got martial law in a geographic area? You got the National Guard on standby. The mayor that made all these phone calls. Make it a no-gun zone. Nobody's bringing guns there but the police. Nobody. Your Second Amendment, not today, not here, not right now. This is emergency. No. It's for it. Well, Constitution, we can't do it. Then let's enact it. because you got to do more than just allow these people, and some of them are yahoos, nuts, and militia idiots. And Second Amendment people, if your feelings get hurt, I'm sorry. I'm not talking about all of y'all, but you know you better than I do. And if you feel that way, but you don't have a problem, you ain't never yelled hijack on a plane. You never yelled fire in a theater. And these constitutional rights can be and should be altered or toned down, giving a specific circumstance for a specific time. It shouldn't be blanket. And it's funny that that Second Amendment is the only one that's just nobody wants to touch it. Your freedom of speech can be touched at all times and altered, and it depends on how the officer or authority figure views your Second Amendment speech as to whether you go on a no-fly list. I'm done. You know, Izzy, I see you thinking, brother.
I mean, I just, we talk about the laws and enacting new laws and changing new laws and changing the laws, and it we should and we need to, obviously, but it always, it seems more and more to me that it's like, it's the whole bandaid over a bullet wound, dog collar on the bad dog solution that doesn't really solve the problem. It kind of, it's like a protection against the underlying issue. Because so the ongoing debate when we talk about Rittenhouse, at least from what I've seen, is people are still debating whether or not that decision had to do with white supremacy. And you've got, you know, from the average citizen up to politicians adamantly saying that it had nothing to do with white supremacy, that it was, you know, the jury doing what they were supposed to do, and that fails to acknowledge, that ignores what the protest the Rittenhouse is at was about. It ignores what the decision would have been if Rittenhouse was a person of color. It ignores the fact that the police in Kenosha were recorded and are known to have actually, for all intents and purposes, deputized these militia members and supported them. Also, it's known that white supremacy is rampant in policing, in federal agencies, in politics, in your corrections industry. It's everywhere. So enacting these laws and everything is good, but it doesn't get rid of the root of the problem, which is the white supremacist history of this country and how it has guided the enaction of these laws and how changing the laws is just kind of going to put a muzzle on them but not get rid of them to a certain degree. And I think that's something that needs to be talked about more, is the underlying issues that perpetuate these problems. Because the reason Rittenhouse is able to do this stuff is because the police supported what he was doing and why he was doing it and why the militia members were doing it. The reason January 6th was able to happen was because people on all echelons of power supported it, were involved in it, and knew people who were doing it. And the reason we can't get anybody to really prosecute it, where the reason there's no real punishment, is because the people that are supposed to be handing out the punishments are their boys. They're hanging out together. They know each other. They believe in the same thing. It keeps coming out that police departments around the country, hackers are releasing records, that they're members of Proud Boys, that they're members of all of these militias. They're on their newsletters. They're listed in their laws. It just came out in Florida that in federal and state prisons throughout Florida, all of those guys are allowed, they vocally support white supremacist organizations like the KKK and all these other organizations and use it as threats against both fellow employees and prisoners. And these reports keep coming up. And we don't talk about that to a certain degree. We talk about the laws to control this bad group of people. But this bad group of people is an underlying majority that is running things and playing things against the minority population. Not the minority population, but the minority interest.
You know,
he left one group out, the Oath Keepers. I forgot about the Oath Keepers. I couldn't think of their name.
There's been an article floating around Chicago that there's about 14 people on our books that are actual members of the Oath Keepers.
Yeah. And so, police departments come out and defended these guys. They're like, oh, no, they're not members anymore. Right, because that's how that works. So the police really, you just put them into the closet and put them away. Like, man, that was a crazy time in my 30s.
Like, well, don't forget about the head of our FOP union stood and said, the Patriots in D.C. were. He stood and said they've been fighting the – he's been directing the members of the Chicago Police Department to hold the line on the vaccine, which is the dumbest shit I've heard. And he basically told the police officers who are following his lead, you don't have to listen to the mayor. What vaccine?
And Joe, if I can go to a Facebook comment real quick. Good morning, Cindy. Good to see you. That Jeannie Renee Arnold wrote, and it's very good, and I feel it's worthy because saying what she's saying, I understand what a lot of people believe, and she said the Second Amendment is to protect Americans from a, capital letters, tyrannical, uncapital government.
Okay.
Capital letters, that's uncapital, what the Second Amendment is actually for. And I agree with her, but then I have to say, tyrannical according to who? There becomes the issue. Tyrannical according to who? And that's why I'm glad the Rittenhouse thing came up first, because someone asked me earlier, are you going to comment on it? I said, no, I'm not going to say much more on it. I'm sitting back and I'm watching. Joe called me. We talked. John called me. Izzy called me. We sat back and watched. For me, what I wanted to see, curiously, was how white America reacted to this. And contrary to popular belief, black folks across America, we don't have a hotline where we all have each other's numbers. We didn't call each other and say, don't go to the rally. Go look at those rallies. I saw in it, and I didn't listen to any volume on any newscast. I purposely turned the volume down and just looked at the rally. And I saw predominantly a lot of white folks out there that were upset with the Rittenhouse decision. And so there's a part of me that says, now you understand Tamir Rice. Now you understand Trayvon Martin. Now, and this is just Stan talking for Stan. But I'm going, now you see it. And which I go back and say, while race is a factor in some of this, it's not the deciding factor. This is an economic factor. What's in the best interest? Kyle Rittenhouse got more offers this morning from Matt Gaetz, who ought to be glad his ass ain't in jail yet. But they want to make this guy now the poster boy. So he gets to now go out, and he's going to get his endorsements, and he gets to go out and promote whatever his beliefs are, which he's too young and stupid to even have an opinion. He was just there because, like he said in his testimony, I bought the gun because it looked cool. He didn't know anything about the mechanics of the weapon, but it looked cool. But that's who all – now all of a sudden the right wing, everybody wants to put Kyle Rittenhouse out as your poster child.
Well, so, wait, here's the thing. Again, this is almost Zimmerman-esque.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How is this a right to defend himself? How? The lady on here, Ms. Sharp, says, I agree Kyle should not have been there, but he had every right to defend himself. How? Against what? Had you not been standing there with a rifle, again, did some people get in his face? Certain. But there's a thing called, equal force, back away. There's this thing called common sense. Well, I'm sorry, let's leave that common sense, leave that out. Let's just throw that away.
That's what place
this mantra is a Zimmerman. I call it the Zimmerman defense. Stand your ground. The fact that he was able to get off with stand your ground when he was the aggressor, shown to be the aggressor. He was ordered by the dispatch, leave that guy alone. He was ordered. So how is that stand your ground self-defense? And
Joe, and not to introduce a conspiracy theory, but just real quick, John, I'm going to say this and I'll go to you. But I watched that trial and I followed it. And you got to follow the money in this. If you convict Kyle Rittenhouse, you now open up the city's coffers because there's too much video of the officers giving them water, giving them snacks at the rest point, thanking them for being there. Then you get into being deputized. So now we get into the city being civilly liable. And then you're opening up millions. And trials are about money. They're about money from the lawyers being paid how much they're going to make off you being in prison. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I just want to say, man, I left a lot of people behind those walls who illegally obtained weapons, who brought weapons across state lines, and those were part of the charges that they was convicted of. They had beef, and they called themselves defending themselves. It don't happen for us. It don't happen for us. We don't get to say this is self-defense. We don't get to say this is us protecting ourselves. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was the thing with prosecutors and lawyers. They are the best actors there is on the earth. Like, they go into the judges' chambers, they discuss things, then they come back out when they hold court, and then you would think that they never had a conversation. And you got the lawyer making an argument over here, the prosecutor, and then the judge is sitting there as if he's making a ruling at that point in time. This is all a big smokescreen, and people need to understand this, that they already discussed these issues in chambers, come out, and they make these so-called arguments in front of people. Another thing is, when we start talking about defense attorneys, how many people stop to research whether that defense attorney was once a prosecutor and still may have ties to certain prostitutes? They all work together. So we can't sit back and talk about a justice system. And I think it was Travis who brought up the fact about money. And your money is good when they don't want you. But when they want you off the streets, if you want a bus, no matter how much money you have, they're going to find a way to break their own law to put you behind those walls. So it's not always about money. Now, I will say that there are people who are dumb enough to believe that this case wasn't about race, because someone told me a couple of days ago, oh, no, he killed two white dudes. If you know the mindset of a racist, because I sat in prison around racists, the white supremacist has a worse hate for a white dude,
yep,
that they consider a traitor, a race traitor, than they do a black person. They would call him an N lover. They would call him a wigger, which means white N. But they would talk about them in those terminology. So just because he didn't kill two black people, anybody that's supporting, I hear an echo.
That's okay. That's Billy coming in. You're okay, John. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm glad Billy's here.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
I just want to say that, and Joe, my question to you instead is, how do you have a crime without a victim?
John,
I thought in order to have a crime, you need a victim.
You know, I'll just say, for Joe chimes in more eloquently than I will, this would bother me with Judge Schroeder and that comment. You know, I was waiting to hear the word alleged. You're a judge. Now, unless you can show proof at trial that this guy did this crime, this guy did this crime, this guy did this crime, how do you allow them to call them looters, rioters, without the word alleged? That's what threw me off with it. I'd never seen it. Joe and I talked this morning about 30 minutes before the show, and Joe seen more murder trials than most people seen funerals. And I'll let him explain what he told me, and because he sums up my frustration a lot better than I could. Joe?
I don't know if I can eloquently state it as John did, but the fact of the matter is that...
It's bullshit.
Okay. Your turn to put the money in the jar. This but, you know, how do you have a trial without a victim? How do you, I've never seen it. I mean, I've been on trials, but I've never seen them not cost the victim a victim. I mean, you criminalize the victim, and that's supposedly not what the court is about. The court's position, at least what I believe, the court's position is to be a trial of fact and be as neutral as they could be and put on the facts so that the 12 jurors could try it. That was what I thought. Now, in this case, I didn't see that. Do I see grounds of, in any other trial would this have been retried?
Yes.
Easily. I mean, there were so many, grounds for appeal and everything else. But in a murder trial, you can't do it. Once he's acquitted, you don't get a second shot at the apple in this case.
Joe, and I'm glad we got Billy here to chime in because my mind was all over the place. Yes, and I just sent him, and I know he's traveling, and I just sent him, hey, Billy, I sent you the link, and so he's here. Big brother Billy Clark, what's going on, brother?
What's going on? I'm here in the Windy City.
Look out, man.
Going to Chicago. I wanted to, I'm going to hook up with you, John. We're going to get together at some point before I leave. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see my post yesterday. I was on the news on Channel 8. Stan, did you get a chance to
look at it? Yeah, I did.
Okay. So my point is that the judge already directed where this outcome was going to go right at the very beginning by not allowing terms that we all know is used in a criminal proceeding. There's a victim. There's a complainant. Mm-hmm. There's a defendant. There's a, you know, and the state has the burden to prove all these things. And when you're not allowing the basic elements or terminology for a jury, now the jury's going to get that, and they're already going to be biased because now the judge is telling them that there's no victim.
Mm-hmm.
No victims, no crime.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you.
And especially if you, you know, the fact that these individuals, you know, they died, and that's not in dispute, then we already have a victim. So at the basic essence of basic criminology, we have a victim. And when you do that, you're introducing such biased behavior on the trier of fact. In this case, the jury is the trier of fact. They're going to look at, hey, if the judge is telling me this, then we can't convict this guy because nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect of it. I want to also mention about this whole notion of self-defense. And in Wisconsin law, I've looked it up. It's a little bit different than Texas law, where in Texas the defendant has the burden to prove that self-defense is an affirmative defense, unlike in Wisconsin, where the state has to prove or disprove that self-defense did not happen. The ultimate thing is if you come to an event armed, ready to go, your actions, your intent right there is to be hostile.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't lie and say you're coming as a medic, as a doctor or whatever, someone to give aid to people in distress. There's nobody in distress. And you're not even a doctor. You're not a medic. You're nothing but an average citizen. Now, Sam, you were in the Air Force for multiple years. If a medic in the military went after an enemy, he loses that
medic
privilege under the Geneva Convention.
Yes.
As a medic, the moment he picks up an arm, even against an enemy, a known enemy, the moment you pick up that weapon, you've lost that status under the Geneva Convention. So, this whole notion of him being able to carry guns and go out targeting people, which he was going to do, he was out there to pick somebody off, and that's what he did.
You know, Billy, let me ask you this, brother. I'm glad we got you, and I'm going to keep you while we got you. You know, the prosecution played one excerpt from the Rittenhouse trial where somebody was breaking into a pharmacy or a store or something, and he made the comment, I wish I had my AR with me. Okay, so that there shows intent. But what I really want to do is I want to get from you, and I want everybody to know for the record right now that Billy's not a prosecutor. So you're looking at a defense attorney picking apart the defense. any interest of being truthful and right and just. I want to ask you this, because I'm particularly disturbed with, before any of this happened, we had the video of Kyle Rittenhouse and several of his group members meeting at a rally point. I don't know if it was a police rally point or their rally point that the police had prior notification for. The fact is there were officers there. Water was exchanged. Comments were made by the police, we're glad you guys are here, or something to that effect. So now we start treading this line of when you deputize someone, where this person feels, whether you said it, whether it was by your actions, they now feel empowered that they are going out under the cover of you, which goes into question. When Kyle Rittenhouse, well, after shooting two people, three people, killing two and injuring one, was walking back through an armored vehicle column of police, and with his weapon across his chest, he was able to throw up a hand signal and glaze through and go home. Now, none of us on this panel that everybody's looking at, there's no way in the damn world, I don't care if everybody knows Billy Clark personally had stayed with him. If Billy Clark would have walked up through that smoke after gunshots were fired,
it got smoke.
And chased, oh yeah, and chased by a mob, you would not be here today.
It got smoke, trust
me. At all. And that's part of what my message was. I don't know if you guys get a chance to read what or listen to that video. We have different criminal justice systems. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's definitely one for the rich, the poor. There's a criminal justice system for police officers that have did things outside of their duty, and then there's a criminal justice system for people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And each one has its own issues inherent with that particular system. This particular one, I know they're saying that it wasn't a racist type event because of individuals that were killed were white as well. But you got to still look at the defendant. The defendant that the vigilante that did these things, his privilege. He's able, like Sam said, he's able to put his hands up and not get one to the torso. But he's able to walk out a free man, and we can never charge him for this crime. And it is a crime. I mean, self-defense should not have been on the table. There was no self. You don't initiate something and then try to say self-defense when shit starts getting bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, and that's why I found it interesting, because they also charged, one of the charges is manslaughter. Manslaughter is not a defense position.
Absolutely.
And I tried to explain that to my colleagues, they didn't get it. But that in and of itself should have said something to the jury. Wait a minute. This is on the table. Well, what does it actually mean?
Right.
But again, the DA should have brought that point out.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have a manslaughter charge as self-defense, as a affirmative defense.
Absolutely, because the intent of manslaughter is either voluntary or involuntary, and your intent is to kill. So your intent isn't to in fear of your life, but it's to kill.
Right. And Billy, let me ask you this, because, you know, I thought one of the things that really cut the knees out from under the prosecution, which I think the prosecution wasn't the most on point, and I don't care how much money was raised for Kyle Rittenhouse. You got taxpayers on the other side that are paying a hell of a lot of money. So, I don't throw that one out there. But one of the things that bothered me, and maybe if I'm wrong, please correct me in front of everybody that's saying, no, you're not seeing it exactly right. I don't have a problem with that. But when that judge struck down the curfew violation, basically, you've got all, why are all the cops there? The police are there because of what? There's a curfew violation. So if you struck it down for Kyle Rittenhouse, then you didn't strike it down for the protesters. So after the Kyle Rittenhouse incident, everybody who was a protester that was arrested or pepper sprayed or shot or whatever for a curfew violation, they should be able to go back and get that thrown out. And it undercut the needs of the prosecution. in my opinion, and I've said this on here and I'll say it again, Judge Schroeder, whatever his name was, he was the best attorney Kyle Rittenhouse had in that courtroom.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I mean, the curfew violation is, you know, violating that is a crime, right? So whenever you are going to use self-defense, you can't be engaged in a criminal activity.
Mm-hmm.
So that curfew violation alone is a criminal activity for him, as well as crossing the state line.
Thank you.
The possession of a firearm.
Amen.
That you know you didn't rightfully purchase. You are a minor, and then you're out on the street initiating things. It's the same thing in a civil case. It's called coming to the nuisance. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but
mm-hmm.
if you go and purchase this nice, beautiful home, 6,000 square feet, and you get it for $100,000, but you're right next to Chicago O'Hare, you don't get to talk about the noise from the airplanes. Because the noise was there before you. You come to the nuisance.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, what I'm saying is Kyle Rittenhouse, he came to this with an AR-15 ready to kill people. And he shot the first guy twice in the back, twice in the torso, in the front. I mean, that alone right there is telling you that, okay, if I'm going to shoot you in the back, that's not self-defense right there.
You're moving away.
Yeah, to me, you know, I all I can do is equate what he's doing to the military, because a lot of stuff he's doing is a rogue, what a rogue military member would do that would be convicted under the UCMJ and convicted under international law for what he did. But he's found not guilty in our Constitution.
And Billy, in line with what you're saying, you referenced earlier the Geneva Convention, and I know this is not wartime, but it's what you said, I don't want it to go unnoticed on this show, because you brought up something that's very relevant. Kyle Rittenhouse is the one who said he came there to administer medical treatment to everyone. He came there. Medics don't even carry weapons.
Exactly.
When they're out there.
Exactly.
So you came in to a protest in a hotbed of violence and tension and whatever may happen. You came into this scenario that you traveled a distance to go to. You knew what you were coming to, or you were aware of. You had knowledge of others. You met with others. So you know what the other's opinion or standpoint is because you're coming there. Okay, you get there. You choose to carry this AR to administer treatment, medical treatment, or whatever is necessary. And at one point in the testimony, he even said, when he went from point A to point B, I wouldn't go there because I didn't have my AR at the time. I had given it to somebody. He said that. So he's saying, I don't feel safe without this gun. And this is just Stan. Even as a cop, sometimes we know, Joe, we know when I got to back out. This is bigger than I thought. I can't handle it. I got to get out. Self-preservation is the first law of nature. He did an interview while he was out there. He did an interview with a news crew that was put out there. But I think there's so many optics in this trial. I think the prosecution was poor. They were poorly prepared. I think that favoritism came into play. I think that the fact that the police, meeting with these people at a staging point, giving them water, giving them comfort, saying things like, we're glad you guys are here, you deputized them, which made the city liable. If you would just take a minute, Billy, we got you here. Please talk about that point, why that part, that conversation is crucial.
Well, they would stand essentially by the police calling for patriots, whatever the term was they used, to come to assist in the aid of citizens in this town. I think the police should be, at least at a minimum, whoever did this should be a co-defendant.
Right.
That's a co-defendant on trial. Because they had that meeting of the minds. It was called a meeting of the minds. They met together. They came up with a plan.
and Kyle Rittenhouse executed that plan.
Mm-hmm.
For lack of a better word, he executed two people. He did what he was told to do, and he did. So the co-defendant should have been somebody on that police department, whoever made that call, to deputize these individuals to come forward and do it. And that's exactly what Cal did in this case. One of the things I was going to talk about on self-defense aspect of it, Stan, is that, you know, a lot of times people use self-defense as, okay, I can do these things and I can get out. I can just use it as a ploy.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, you know, self-defense is one of those things that it's rarely used, first of all, because it's very difficult to prove it. And when you introduce yourself with some kind of weapon, you don't get to really do it. Look at what happened in Florida with, what's his name?
Norman?
No, the kid that was killed with the Skittles.
That's Zimmerman.
With George Zimmerman in that deal. Well, same thing. He initiated the contact when the, excuse my French, I'm going to have to owe you a lot of money, but when the shit didn't work out for him, now he's going to fear for his life. And once again, our justice system allowed him to be found not guilty. And then what did he do later? I think he had some other incidences later throughout the country.
But Billy, you opened up so many kinds of worms that I went into talking to Joe this morning. That now, let's talk about that for a minute, because there are parallels. Besides racial parallels, there are parallels with Trayvon. There are parallels with Tamir.
Yes.
And there are parallels with this incident in respect to Kyle Rittenhouse. We haven't even, good God, we haven't even gotten to Aubrey yet, and we're still here. You know, now here's my thing. In all of this, and self-defense being introduced, you know who has remained quiet? Or not just the Aubrey case or the McMichaels case, but the Rittenhouse case. You know who stayed quiet on it? The NRA. We ain't heard a word from the NRA. But now, I want people to Google this lady. For God's sake, please Google her. Marissa, M-A-R-R-I-S-S-A, Alexander, common spelling. Google her. Her situation happened in the same county in Florida as Trayvon's case did. The same district attorney that prosecuted her did a piss-poor job with George Zimmerman. And the NRA was all over that case on right to defend yourself. Even though she fired a warning shot in her house and there was people can Google it, she had a protective order against her ex-husband or whatever. But I found the NRA now is backing away from all of this. They didn't say anything so far on either one of these two cases. And they've flown under the radar. Nor have they allowed. Go ahead, Iz.
The NRA's got their hands full right now. They had to declare bankruptcy recently, and the entire country of Mexico is trying to sue them for their hand in the violence going on in that country.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a lot of issues. Of course, they're not going to touch this. They're trying to stay afloat. They don't have the PR needed anymore to add their voice to this conversation.
So, you know, I say to the people who want to advance equal rights and equal protection in the Constitution forward, why are you not noticing this? Sometimes it's not who's at the fight, it's who's not there and why. You know, and that's where I think we keep dropping the ball. Everybody in front of you is not a Goliath. We're in front of a lot of Davids in reference to police reform. They're Davids with Goliaths behind them, but Goliath ain't there. So we need to move forward. And it's still open, but I want to, for Stan, you guys can bring in anything you want to bring in. John, I know you wanted to bring in the one shooting that took place. I want to get to the Aubrey thing, but John, go ahead, brother. Talk about that shooting.
No, Stan. I want to stay on with the next case and let that be something at the end, if we could, please.
Okay. Well, the Ahmaud Aubrey case.
No.
No, the Ahmaud Arbery case, not trial, the Ahmaud Arbery case, because Ahmaud Arbery is not on trial, as Joe pointed out and said. You know, we these media people, and it's funny, when black people are killed, it's their trial. That's what you see up there. It's not their trial. They're not the ones who are sitting up there in that box. You know, let me, before I even go there, because I'm gonna be loyal to these callers that are calling in, 314 area code 4600. What's going on?
Hey, Stan, enjoyed your conversation the other day. Hey, I got two things for you. One thing that really hang on there for a second.
Somebody at the door. Hello?
One thing that really teed me off, resulting around Mr. Rittenhouse, is that in the Norfolk, Virginia Police Department, you had a police officer by the name of William Kelly, and he donated to Kyle Rittenhouse's defense on his own time, on his own computer. I think he donated $25. Now, apparently, the donation site was hacked and his name was secured. And it got back to the police department. Well, you had city manager Chip Fowler put in the process of firing him for that donation. Now, William Callow is a white police officer. And the police chief is Larry Boone. He's black. But here's the thing. That is totally ridiculous. You mean to tell me you as a police officer in particular, but not necessarily, don't have the right to express your own First Amendment rights on your own time? It wasn't nothing outrageous. He donated. I donated. What's your opinion on that?
Let me ask you this, brother. I'm not going to disagree with you there. Absolutely, God should have the right to do it. But anytime an officer speak up about policing, can speak up about the need for changing in policing, can speak up for the fact that people have been marginalized generationally in the name of justice for some, can not mention their department, which this guy didn't, and yet still you have to endure hardship. So I agree with you, but I say in term I use, America has selected outrage. They pick and choose what they choose to be outraged about if it impacts them. I know of people, officers, who have spoke up about need for changes in policing, and at the same time, I don't see those very same people who would support a Kyle Rittenhouse supporting them, makes sense.
I agree. It's the differences in human beings. And one other quick thing. You're going to have a case come up with that young 18-year-old high school student that done the shooting in Arlington, Texas High School, if I'm not mistaken. Now, you know where his stance is now. Think about that, and let's see how that trial goes down.
Well, I'm going to be very curious. This is a kid that, according to his testimony, and I don't know any more about him than I do Rittenhouse, that was in fear of his life, that was bullied every day. The administrators didn't do anything about it. And I'm just going by what I've read. The administrators didn't do anything to fix it. I'm not saying the kid should have taken a gun and done what he did. But I'm not saying Kyle Rittenhouse should have done what he did either, going there as a medic and carrying a gun. That's my opinion. So I am watching that, and I'm very curious as to how that gets addressed. Compared to how, you know, so yes.
The kid he was fighting was 3 years younger than him. Yeah.
Hang on one second, Jackie. Go ahead, Iz.
One question I have regarding what the first thing he said about the officer in Norfolk, which, I mean, you can have debates on whether or not he should or should not have done that and whether or not it's right to fire him. But my question on that is, that seems like a very double-edged sword situation. Where do you draw the line? Because fine, he donated to the Rittenhouse campaign. That's one thing. But I just said earlier that there are cops showing up on lists of registries for Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, the KKK, white supremacist groups. And when you become a police officer, as a public servant, don't you relinquish some of your you know, First Amendment privileges, especially when it pertains to, you know, outspokenly advocating and supporting white supremacist groups? Isn't there a certain curtailment that needs to be placed on those actions by public servants, especially when they can affect, they actually can affect how these people perform their duties? Like, where do you draw the line? Like, fine, he could be allowed to donate to the Rittenhouse crowd, but then if he's allowed to donate to the Rittenhouse crowd, why isn't he allowed to donate to the KKK? Why isn't he allowed to donate to the Old Keepers and the Proud Boys? What are the dangers that allowing him to do that could create in the future? How does that affect his performance as a civil servant?
Well, you know, I got a response to that. Is that a time bomb ticking in the background?
You lose the right to search and seize. For instance, if you go put something in the station,
that locker technically does not belong.
It belongs to
the right to free association. For instance, if you know felons, you cannot associate with them, even though they can be your family. You lose the right to free speech. No, you cannot say what you feel as a police officer. No, you don't have that right. And that's, again, you have the right to your opinion, but not to the job. The Supreme Court has said that. They ruled on it.
Well, if I could respond to that, you had a Supreme Court justice, two of them actually. One was Hugo Black, and the other was Warren. Hugo Black was a member of the Ku Klux Klan, and he turned out to be the most pro-civil rights justices that the bench has ever had. Brennan was also for about a week, and then he relinquished his membership. So that association at one time determining how you're going to react, well, with just those two cases there, shows that there's really no correspondence or no collaboration between the two. But anyway, Sam, thanks a lot for the opportunity. I'll talk to you later.
All right, brother. I appreciate it. I appreciate you calling in. But I'll say this before I go to this other caller, which, oh, man, he just dropped. But before I go to that, I got to say, you know, when we talk about politicians supporting an opinion that has been controversial to their demonstrated beliefs, I got to ask, were they running for office at the time that they said, I'm done?
Black also supported civil rights after renouncing the KKK breaking off being a member of the organization. So
thank you.
He wasn't a KKK member and advocating for civil rights. That's not what was happening.
That tidbit of information does not keep but look, let me ask you, I don't know if Billy's still here. I see his monitor, but I got it. Sandy Sharp asked me to ask this. In Texas, I guess she's saying that if you've got a theft charge, you cannot sit on jury in Waco. But if you're a felon, you can. Is that true in all states?
Well, I know in Texas, if you have certain crimes of moral, they call it moral trust. Then you cannot sit on a jury. You can't even sit on it. Can't be a part of the grand jury process. I'm not sure of other states, but I know Texas does have that.
I'm in Illinois, I don't believe misdemeanor theft would preclude you from a jury trial. A felon neither. No, I mean if your right to be reinstated, then I would imagine that you full citizenship, for lack of a better term, is also granted. So that would knock that out. If you've gotten your right to vote back.
And that's the same in Texas. If your rights are restored, that's a whole different issue.
Right.
So, yeah.
And, you know, going back to the Rittenhouse thing, Tim Calloway, sergeant I work with at Waco BD, he says, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse purported himself to be a medic. I didn't even see a medic bag there.
Well, he had a bag. Now, oh, no, it's been all the photos.
He
claimed it was a medic bag, but it
could have
been a hand grenade.
You can't just claim you're a medic.
Right.
Exactly. You can't walk into a protest with a box of Band-Aids and be like, I'm a medic. That's
but,
not how that
but,
works.
But, brain surgery. But let me ask this.
In fact, here's one thing, too. If you, let's just say he lied and said he was a medic and somebody's injured and he goes to their aid pretending to be a medic, he could be held liable. Even as a good Samaritan, because he lied, you know, we do protect our healthcare providers that, you know, treat people like that. But a regular citizen that's lying about their status, no.
If you're not licensed to do CPR, when I worked in restaurants and stuff like that, I was one of the few people I got licensed to do it, but they always say, like, if you're not licensed, do not touch that person.
That's right.
Because you will get in trouble.
Yeah, vicarious liability.
But let me add this to you. In this whole discussion, one thing that disturbed me the most was that they never put on the autopsies of the victims. Now, we know that one guy was shot four or five times, two in the back, two in the shoulder. The two in the back, one of them was the kill shot, which would have been indicative of him moving away. So, again, there's so many problems with this thing. I mean, look, just as a homicide detector, I would take a half problem.
And, Joe, and this is why we do this show.
Absolutely.
I mean, it aggravates me. We bring people here like Billy, Vic Pizzell. We bring people who are attorneys, who know the courtroom. Stan is not the brightest bulb in the room. But you know what makes me shine? Because I know that. So I surround myself with people who are brighter than me and experts. I got a homicide detective from Chicago sitting right up here. And you folks, you hear this stuff every week. You don't share it. You don't send the show. We don't get paid, not for likes and clicks, but for information. Joe just brought up something that all of you, I don't give a damn whether you live in Kenosha, Waco, Texas, Dallas, Brooklyn, wherever you live, these things should be sticking in your mind. The education process is moving forward. It's ongoing. You're getting it here firsthand. Joe, let me ask you this. Approximately, if you know the exact number, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine. Approximately, Joe, how many murders have you worked?
Less than 100, more than 50.
Okay. How many people do you know that were murdered where you didn't get that case, but it was a murder that came into your unit?
Quite a bit. Quite a bit.
America. This is where my people perish for lack of knowledge. We're here every week. John is here. Izzy is here. Billy comes. Joe is here. Claire comes. We're telling you what is going on. And one of the things that really, in my personal 30 seconds, and I'm going to do it in 30 seconds, that frustrates me, is when I see all these silly, nonsensical, bullshit videos shared on TikTok that have nothing to do with nothing, and some of y'all are willing to watch these videos for 20 minutes when they keep saying, we're going to turn the pot over now, and you watch that crap. But you won't come here and listen to people who are going through what we're talking about and listen to experts on what we're talking about. And we wonder why America doesn't know what the hell it's doing right now. From a criminal justice perspective and from a legal perspective, it doesn't. But the system is working like it's designed. Go ahead, John. I see you, brother.
They don't want none of that smoke.
I'm taking it all in, man, because a lot being said, man, and this country's in trouble, man. It's really in trouble. That's all I want to say, man. And
it's only in trouble for certain groups of people.
Amen.
It's great for a bunch of other people.
It's in trouble to where those who plan the trouble are comfortable. They couldn't wait to get, you know, the horses say we're in trouble when they're corralled. But the folks wanting to corral them say we got them where we want them. That's a fact. This system, we have been so divided on race and taught to focus on every single thing on race, see, that a lot of this, especially when we talk about the criminal justice system, is socioeconomic. I did that show the other night, West Virginia. Good luck finding a black person there. That's as white as you get.
It is socioeconomic, but in this country especially, you can't separate race from economics.
No, you can't on the cause, but when we get into the law enforcement reaction, the officer on the street doesn't care why you're poor and white trash. They don't care. Or poor or black trash or Puerto Rican trash or Mexican. They don't care. They deal with what is. We're rudimentary creatures. We're working the call to get through it. We may have your best you know, outcome in mind, but we're dealing with what we have to deal with. And they don't.
A poor white person who gets stopped by a cop and a poor black person who gets stopped by a cop, a poor white person is more likely to make it out of that stop alive than a poor black person.
You know, if the, I'll agree. And
if you're a poor white person, you're still starting the game slightly ahead.
I will say this. I will say my personal experience, I can't say that that's true. And it's just my personal experience in my geographic area. Because I also recognize that when we have people who have a systemically racist system in place, that that poor white person, even though they're poor and white, and Stan is poor and black, but Stan is black, that poor white person represents a reminder to them not only where they could be, but of a family member they despise because of where they are. Because we're talking about a supremacy mentality, and you are an embarrassment to that which I enforce. And I've seen some poor white people who were homeless that got dealt a shitty hand of cards. Whereas had they been black, the only benefit they would have had was if they screened the race card, and does the individual officer, not the institution, but does the individual officer want the blowback?
Let me throw this in. Just in the paper today, a New York man was sentenced to 8 years probation and no jail time after he pleaded guilty to raping 14 teenage girls during parties at his parents' house when he was a teenager. Niagara County Judge Matthew Murphy III said a prison sentence in this case would be inappropriate. And you wonder what's wrong?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're shocked about the Rittenhouse, how that turned out. Talk to
this guy.
Talk to victims of domestic violence who killed their abusers and are now in prison. Talk to those people.
Here's another one I got for you. Yesterday when I was doing the newswork for my job, I came up with this little tidbit. We want to talk about the connection between socioeconomics and race. So in 2020, black men in the United States had a lower life expectancy in the first half of 2020. It was 68.3 years. That's lower than males in Syria, Uzbekistan, Iraq, and North Korea. There's a neighborhood, and this is on the Gravel Institute. You can look this up. There's a neighborhood in Boston. There's a neighborhood in Boston called Back Bay. It's one of Boston's richest neighborhoods. Life expectancy there is 91.9 years. That's higher than Switzerland, Norway, and Japan. In Roxbury, which is a poor neighborhood, minority neighborhood, 4 miles away, it's 58.9 years. That's lower than Zimbabwe, Syria, and Afghanistan. What are we talking about? Like, there's a connection. And the socioeconomic part of it is real. The race part of it is real. And you have to have a conversation about it all together, which, to Stan's point, people don't like having complex conversations.
No, it goes back to, you know, why did I start this show out with MLK's letter from the Birmingham judge, that excerpt addressing the white moderate? I did because black folks don't have political power in this country. Minorities, indigenous people, Hispanic people, they don't have it. So we have to rely. You don't always get a chance to be at the Black Lives Matter rally. Look at me. You don't get to post a picture of your black stepdaughter. So now you're okay. You're accepted. I want to say, and I'm not speaking for black people when I say this, I'm speaking for Stan. A picture of you with your black stepdaughter or with your black friends at work, that ain't good enough. It ain't good enough. And I think that we've seen, especially with the induction of the Karens on social media, there's been this influx of people who go out of their way to let you know, it ain't me, I have black friends. What are we all here? The card. I got black friends. I don't hate Puerto Ricans. I got Puerto Rican friends. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. And so I think until we can all talk about racial justice, we can put up the pictures and videos of all these Black Lives Matter rallies, including that bullshit last night where they said Black Lives Matter, but no black people there. And like I said, newsflash, we didn't call each other and say don't go. I think that black people, and I'm not speaking for all black people, collectively set that to wait on white America's reaction to the Rittenhouse trial. Not to criticize it and not to condone it or co-sign it. But we wanted to see what white Tamir Rice looked like. We wanted to see what white Trayvon looked like. We wanted to see what white Walter Scott looked like, even though it wasn't a cop that killed the gentleman. But that's what we sat back and looked at. And protest organizations, whatever, looked disorganized. Nobody had a message. There was no passion. There was no spirit. There was no nothing. Not to say that people weren't sincere, but there was no soul in it. Because, not because you didn't care, but you've never had to do this. We've done it our whole lives, to vote, to go to school, to walk down the street, to not be shot. It is in our DNA to fight this system that is inherently corrupt us. I don't have to call Joe and ask Joe how we're going to do the protest. I can call Joe and say, I'm doing this. He say, I'm on my way. So America needs to be waking up and really looking at this point where we are in time, not because of Kyle Rittenhouse, and not in spite of Kyle Rittenhouse, but because we, America, is at an inflection point. Especially with these young people, black, white, Hispanic, whatever, gay, straight, they don't care about race and economics. They want to survive. And they're calling out people. And then you got people my age, Joe, you know, we're not afraid to call out bullshit. We do it here every Saturday, whether it makes black people mad or white people mad, or preachers, or politicians, or police chiefs especially. So I just think we're in a very interesting time where we all need to be focused not on just what we want to hear, but what we need to know. Floor is open.
Again, let me digress. I dare anyone to go back and get the post on both bodies. I dare anyone to go find the ballistics on the shooting. They would find or try to identify how many shots were fired and by whom. They would tell you a lot of different things. Again, the entry and exit wounds on bodies tell you, you know, the old age-old thing that dead men tell no tale, absolutely a false. An autopsy will speak volumes to you if you know what you're looking for, or you have the right forensic pathologist to sit with you and guide you through. But there's a lot of things that didn't come out in this trial that I thought were suspect, and I'll just leave it at that. The problem is that this guy cannot be retried, not on this level. Now, can he be retried? Can he get federal charges, civil rights violations? Maybe.
Not going to happen.
It may not happen, but he could. He could. Could he get some other things? I think the only thing now they can do is on this soon civil. But as you said earlier, what's he got? Well, I wouldn't care. He wouldn't have a dream after I got to be taken care of him. But certainly there's no going to be no closure for the families of these victims. And let me say that to you. They were victims.
Mm-hmm.
Irregardless, irrespective of whether you like what they were doing or not, they were fucking victims. You need to give them that due. And that's, I'm done with my rant.
And Joe,
I was going to say one
come
thing.
Come on, Billy.
Joe. Even if they sue him civilly, you got to look at the where it's going to be held. Who's going to what's the
sure.
jurisdiction?
Sure.
It's going to be similar jurors that's already familiar with the case. So he's likely it's not going to be like one of those OJ cases where
yeah.
he's not guilty and criminal and then found guilty on the civil side. It's not going to be one of those. He's likely going to be found not guilty for that because of the self-defense aspect of it. So. The silver case is going to be very easy for him to win.
Hey, Billy, I see you're getting ready.
Can I ask Billy a question, Ben?
Yeah, real
yeah.
quick.
Yeah. Billy, two things. The judge made certain rulings that I felt that the prosecutor should have appealed. And I want you to explain to everyone that the prosecutor can't appeal a judge's ruling during the course of a trial or pretrial or, you know, the jury selection and all that. But also, the prosecutor, in my opinion, should have asked for a change of venue. What are your thoughts as an attorney?
Absolutely. As a criminal defense attorney, I would argue against having a change of venue because I would know that this particular jury, this particular judge is going to be favorable for my defendant. But from the bigger standpoint, because like I said, although I am a criminal defense attorney, I am a black man first. So I look at the wrong and the injustice in our system. So I would, from the prosecution standpoint, they want to, you know, having a change of venue would be good for them. But in this case, the state doesn't like to do change of venues. That's a defense tactic. The defense are the ones that usually want to do a change of venue. The state wants to get the notoriety of winning a case in their town. A change of venue would have been helpful here for the prosecution. Maybe you have a special prosecutor, someone that could try the case, that has a little bit more experience in this kind of deal. But for the most part, you know, if he's found not guilty, that's, you know, double jeopardy. He cannot be tried again on those particular charges at all. Now, the judge could be found to have violated certain things, but as a criminal defendant, that's pretty much it. I mean, like Joe said, unless there's some federal issues that come out of it or something federally, you know, he's free to go.
Billy, I think you misunderstood me. When the judge ruled that they cannot be called victims, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a prosecutor, I felt that he should have moved to appeal that decision. Certain decisions that the judge made during the course of the trial, the prosecutor should have had appealed. I'm talking about prior before a verdict.
Okay, yes.
The judge made those rulings. Can you explain that process?
Absolutely. You're spot on, John. The prosecutor should have did everything and put everything on the record, asked for a mistrial, because that's going to affect their case in chief. If they can't put on their good case because of that particular term, and that was key to the term, and then the jury instruction as well, then the prosecutor should have asked for, number one, the judge to recuse himself. If he didn't want to do that, also ask for a mistrial. And then even, you know, up until the jury deliberates, ask for a new trial or something else. Because, yes, once that judge makes that decision and it goes to the jury and he's found not guilty, it's too late at that point. And I see that's what you're saying, John. It's too late at that point. But and I'm not sure what, you know, I have to go look at the archives and see exactly what the prosecutor did in that case. I'm not sure, but I can imagine any basic level prosecutor should have been all over putting up their case as far as why this should be appealed, interlocutory appeal, to make sure that this doesn't go forward because it's going to damage their case.
Let me do this,
if he didn't do that, then the prosecutor could be in trouble. But the bottom line is, you know, it's too late now. He's found not guilty. That's the difference. When you're found not guilty as a criminal defendant, you're good.
You're good to go.
Double jeopardy.
Let me do this, Billy, because we're at that 10-minute mark right now, but you ain't leaving here without telling us about Billy Clark for Dallas County Judge. And the people say, well, you're biased. Damn right, I paid for this. And I know the man's morals. Not what folks want you to know about him. I know about him. So, brother, take a minute. Go ahead and step up to the plate. Tell us about your campaign and what's going on.
Well, real quick, I'm running for Dallas County Judge. ClarkForDallasCounty.com. That's my website. You can find out a little bit more about my platform. I've been endorsed by the National Black Police Association for my efforts at working together with police in our community. Right now, I happen to be in Chicago. I'm visiting some friends, and I'm going to visit Joe as well. And I'm trying to set up a meeting with the former Dallas police chief as now the superintendent here in Chicago. So I, you know, I'm here to just find out about, you know, what we can do better to for crime, just crime in general. We're, you know, I'm sure Chicago's had some issues with crime, and I've seen what they're doing to address it, as well as there's definitely crime in the Dallas area. So my goal is the safety of people. And it doesn't matter what color your skin is. If you live in Dallas County or if you're a tourist in Dallas County, you should be safe. You should not come to our county and feel like you're going to be a victim of some random crime. Now, people do bad stuff, but it shouldn't be our – we shouldn't be known for that. So that's one of my big platforms, as well as being proactive in our emergency management to ensure our people know where resources are before the need arises, instead of just waiting back for things to happen, you know, to them, such as, you know, our issues that we had with the winter storm in February, and even the pandemic rollout of our vaccines, things like that. So there's a lot more. I urge you to go on my campaign site, clarkfordallascounty.com. I'm in the middle of getting campaign signs if you live in the Dallas County area. If you want to contribute to the campaign, you can live anywhere on this God-green earth and still donate to the campaign, and there's no limit. So please go out and contribute. I'll be the very first black person or person of color, period, to hold this position. And this position was created in 1866 in Dallas County, and ever since then it's been only, with the exception of one white female, it's been white males to hold this office. And if we want to say our elected leaders should look like our community, then we need to invite people with experience like myself to the table.
You know, Billy, before you go, you know, Joe and I are the voter. We're going to beat that shit into folks' heads forever. But we talk about it. And if you're going to, and I keep going back to it, I went to a jury selection, judges and all this. You know what? I don't care that you live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I don't care that you live in Atlanta, because you're going to light my Facebook up later with some stuff that happened to your auntie or your auntie or whatever in some place I don't know nothing about. You can send $5. You can say, well, I don't live there, so it ain't going to impact me. I ain't there. You know what? You don't know where you're going to be. You may be visiting somebody in Dallas. Now your ass is sitting in front of a judge. See, so we have to stop looking at where we're at, and we have to look at where we can be. So don't tell me, I don't want to see a bunch of Facebook pro-black and black support black and blah, blah, blah. And then I say, well, did you send any money to the side? Well, no, I live in New Hampshire. Really? See, James Baldwin said, I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. And Maya Angelou said, when people show you who they are the first time, believe them. Billy,
oh my God.
Bro, you're at home here. You're at home here, and your campaign is nationwide. It's not just about Dallas. It's about a justice system that we see needs a broader perspective. It needs an injection of reality. And you're willing to bring that. So you know what? If you live in Washington State, if you live in Oklahoma, put the money over there. You may not benefit from it, but you can say, I did that. See that over there? I did that. And then bring that where you are. So, brother, we appreciate you taking time out being here. Got your scarf on. I know you're in Chicago. Because Texas people, you bought that stuff when you got there, didn't you?
I'm attempting to go outside without my fool jacket on. I got a little hat vest on, but I'm you know, Chicago weather is a little different than Texas.
You buy that in the airport, Billy?
Kmart.
You buy that in the airport? They say, welcome to Chicago. Here go your vest.
Man, yeah. I'm going to definitely look like a Texan out here looking like this. So I do got my scarf on, my gloves, my hat. So I'll be okay.
But you left the cowboy hat home, right?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Okay.
I'm not trying to get killed out here. You talking about my Dallas cowboy?
You're not from around here, are you, boy?
Either one.
Man, either one, yeah. I'm not, no. I try to fit in where I go.
But you know what? I'm glad you said that, though.
With some Cubs or some Bears stuff on, but it'll be while I'm here.
But you know what, Billy? Before the sports hard hits, so, you know, I'm an Eagles fan, you're a Cowboy fan, and we like brothers. And I lived in Texas 25 years. So if sports is dominating your politics and your friendships and who you meet, you know, you're a dumbass. You know, meet people where they're at. So, you know, Joe, talk to us.
Yo, man, I'm getting ready to leave, but Joe, I'm trying to buy you dinner, man, so I'm going to hook up with you, though. Tell me a nice restaurant. I got you, brother.
Oh, you said, all right.
All right. All right.
I'll bring it out for the guys. Trust
me. Be safe, Billy. Love you, man. Thanks for showing.
Thank you.
All right, let's go around the horn because we're at the four-minute mark. So we want to get out real good on time real quick. Big John, 40 seconds, bro.
I'm going to use less than that, man. Great show. I thank everybody for the information they provided. I thank the callers. Travis, always a blessing. And I'm done. See, God willing, see everyone next week.
All right, Ed, come on, bro.
I mean, like Big John said, great show, great topic, frustrating situation that we find ourselves in. I'll do a little self-promotion, actually. I was recently made deputy editor at the Crime Report. And we're going to fundraising season right now. So anybody listening, if you want some good in-depth criminal justice reporting and also just a good resource for criminal justice research and studies. We go back about, we have like 10,000 over the last 10 years. Please subscribe to the Crime Report. We're doing a donation thing right now where if you donate a dollar, we donate a dollar. It's a good resource for some objective journalism, which I think is very much needed nowadays.
Okay, can you put a link in this post? Will you put a link in this live for it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got. Thanks so much for the topic. And hopefully, you know, keep plugging away. Things will get better, maybe. I don't know.
Love the optimism. Big Joe, can you take us out?
Listen, great shows, great topics. I hope some people listen with the inner ear and with the heart. And hopefully we will take over the world. Pinky in the brain. What are you doing tonight? Taking over the world. That's all I got, man.
All right, we're out. Thanks, everybody.
Later.